afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. This is a very special edition for a friend of mine, and you'll know who he is if you ever have listened to my show before, and this is a hint. We'll be right back. Your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I want to give a big shout out today to the composer of my theme music. That would be author and composer, musician Robert Gregory Brown. Surprise! Who happens to be my guest today. Hi, Rob. Welcome back to Authors on the Air.
How are you doing? Listening to that, I thought I should have cut that in half, basically. But
No, because this is my get up and dance around the room until the theme song's over moment, and gets me motivated for the show. I really love it. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you a funny story about the theme song. Two summers ago, when Jenny Milchman was doing her book tour, she did a 38,000-mile book tour by car, took her family with her. Kids were out of school, and they went on two loops around the country, an outer loop and then an inner loop. She stopped at all these bookstores. So she loves touring and loves going to bookstores. Her kids are great. So I would interview her once a week from wherever she was in the country. So it was Where in the World is Jenny Milchman. And she said that that is the music that woke her up every time she had to get up early to do our show. And she loved it. And I've had loads of comments on it. So she and I would dance around the room to this song all the time. So thank you very much for creating such a catchy tune for me. I so appreciate it.
Well, you're
how
welcome.
In the world are you?
I won't tell you how long it took me to write it. So.
No, I know. It took you 5 minutes. I know, because I asked you one day and the next day you had it done. I know. I said, are you ever going to do that song? And you go, yeah, I'll be right back. And then there was a song. So I choose to chalk that up to creative talent and you know, years of honing your craft rather than, okay, Pam's a pain in my ass. I'm going to write this song real quick.
I was simply trying to get an annoying radio host off my ass. That's all.
I know. It only took you 4 years to send
I'm
me
kidding.
A book.
I'm kidding, folks. I'm kidding. Pam's great.
No, he's not. Rob and I have a love-hate relationship. We admit it. I have gone through the 12 steps of Robert Gregory Brown because it was so bad for a while. Now, in all seriousness, I was talking to Rob before the show, and I want to tell you that when I first started in this business, Rob was one of my first guests. His interview in this show was still the highest rating show I've ever done. So we can't figure out why, but we know we had a good time.
Makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
None. And I don't even know if we were talking about any particular book. I think it was Paradise Prophecy. Has it been 4 or 5 years since that book was out?
I think that one came out in 2000, I want to say 11, but I'm not sure.
Well,
they all blend together.
I don't know. They do blend together because you've written so many. So, yeah. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Something else has kind of grabbed onto you. And you,
yes, I've got,
I know
gotten
that you've
the bug.
I know that you've always written music. As a matter of fact, for those of you who are unaware, hang on to this address. Go to www.soundcloud.com and look up Robert Gregory Brown. His music is there. He's a very, very talented musician. No joking. Plays all kinds of strings, mostly guitar, but he plays ukulele. because he's from Hawaii, and Hawaii, I should say, I'm pronouncing it wrong. And you also play a synthesizer, so you do a lot of looping for your music, correct?
Yeah, I do. I have what's called a sampler, so I can do orchestral stuff. I do all kinds of stuff with it. No looping. Looping is a different thing. But
I thought that that's how you created the theme music, by just doing overlays of different sounds.
No, looping is when you get loops that are like pre-recorded music, like
right.
They have drum loops, they have guitar loops, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use that.
Mm-hmm.
I play all my own stuff. So.
Excellent. So you kind of are not writing books, but you kind of are. But in the meantime, you have written an exceptionally beautiful piece of musical theater called The Cradle Song. Can you tell listeners about this, please, Rob? And then we're gonna play a little piece of music from you.
Well, it's something I kind of wrote it. Something I kind
mm-hmm.
of wrote
God,
in
thank
a.
Thank God you're in editing right now. You know.
It was kind of written in a frenzy. I had gone through a really bad year where I'd lost a lot of people in my life, some family and some friends, and was feeling very depressed about, you know, loss and thinking about death. And I'm getting older too, so I think about death also for that reason.
Sure.
But I'd had this idea in my head for years about a young man who gets sick, and he's estranged from his parents. And he has no one to turn to and has to go home and live with them in his final days. And I wanted it to be a story of a kind of a family reunion where they learn to, you know, forgive and accept each other. And I decided to set it in the 1980s, and I gave the kid the reason he's estranged from his parents is because they kicked him out of the house when he came out of the closet when he was a teenager. And now years later, it's in the 80s, he's contracted AIDS, and he's basically come home to live out his final days and, you know, basically reunite with his parents. And, you know, by the end of the play, you know, I hope they've all learned lessons in love, you know, acceptance and basically forgiveness. And I've got a little hospice nurse in there who basically doesn't pull any punches, and kind of he's there not simply to care for the patient, but to care for the patient's family as well. And he helps bring them all together again. But it was something that, you know, it just came out of me, like, you know, I was writing like crazy and the songs were coming out like crazy. And, you know, I finished it within, I don't know, probably about probably 4 months, I think it took me to write it, and was very happy with what I did. And along the way, I was showing parts of it to the person who's now my lead producer, Beth Rudetsky, and she was encouraging me all along the way, and now she's trying to help me get it to hopefully to Broadway. We're shooting for off-Broadway or Broadway. You know, that's a big reach. So we're trying very hard to get there.
And why have a little reach? You need to have a big reach. You know, I'm a firm believer.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're going to reach big, you know, I mean, what the heck?
I've always had big reaches. It was a big reach to think that I'd ever sell a screenplay years ago. And,
right.
It was a big reach to think that I would ever, you know, be with a New York publisher, and I managed to do that. So I figured, hey, I might as well aim big, and so we're both aiming big. And she's been working her butt off on this thing. Besides encouraging me to write it in the first place, you know, she's an accomplished musician herself, so she knows a lot of people in theater, and she's really been working to get the word out about this play and get people to read it. And we got a director attached to it, and we did a first reading, and with the actors and everything. And it was really amazing to actually hear the actors saying the words I'd written, because, you know, it's one thing to be on the page, but when you hear it come to life, it's pretty amazing.
Are the actors that did the reading with you the actors that will ultimately do the production when it goes to the stage?
Well, there's never any guarantee of that. That all depends on so many different factors. You don't really know who's going to wind up there at the end. But they were all so exceptional, I would hope they wind up being the ones doing it. I mean, a lot of that is out of my hands. That comes
it's
down
your
to
your intention to have them, though. You've chosen who you like, and your intention is to keep them.
I very much liked the people who did the roles, and I thought they did a fantastic job. Yeah, it would be great. You know, it all depends on their schedules and, you know, what the ultimate financiers of the thing, who they want to have in the show. You know, there's so many different factors involved. And
right.
we aren't even close to that part of the thing yet. Right now, we're just trying to get more readings so that I can continue to do rewrites. And eventually we want to, you know, kind of put it on its feet and do what they call a stage reading, so that investors can come and look and decide whether or not they want to invest in the play.
Rob, it sounds to me the beginnings of this, well, you got your music out, and then did you write the, I mean, obviously you did the music first, it sounds like anyway. Did you fill in the play?
No, actually,
I
wrote, the way I worked it was I started writing the play, and then I came to a point where I said, okay, this is where I need a song. So I sat down and wrote the song.
Wow.
And then I continued with the play, and then I go, oh, here's where I need another song. So I wrote the next song. And it went along like that. I actually didn't finish writing the music, and I think I finished writing the last song right after I finished writing the play, basically, because the last song is the uplifting ending song, and it just poured out of me.
Amazing. You said that you were doing rewrites. Am I to assume that this is kind of sort of almost like writing a book, except not? You are writing characters and narrative, but there is a fine-tuning process the same way as there is with writing a book?
Oh, absolutely. There's always a fine-tuning process no matter what you write. I mean, you know, I fine-tune emails, for God's sake. What you really need to hear the actors saying the lines and paying attention to the timing and things like that, so that you can see, does it work? You know, like I said, it's one thing to see it on the page. Now, with writing a book, you see it on the page, and really the only way for the author himself to know if it works is to throw it in a drawer for a few weeks and then go back and start reading it again and read it with fresh eyes. Now, my fresh eyes with a play are the actors, you know, speaking the lines and playing the parts, and just seeing how it all flows, that kind of a thing, and looking for ways to make it flow better, because, you know, you never know until you see it performed.
Sure. You've written in your books, you've written from a female POV, you've written from the male POV, so those things I'm not concerned about. When you're writing dialogue for theater, it can't be the same kind of dialogue as you write for a book, obviously. It has to be a little bit more succinct, a little bit not as long. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can get away with a lot more in a book because people are reading it. So, you know, when actors are saying the lines, you want to be careful. I come from a screenwriting background. I did screenwriting before I wrote novels. So I was pretty versed in writing dialogue, and it's especially important in movies to keep the dialogue pretty brief. And actually, in movies, the dialogue is probably the least important part of the entire movie, because movies are a lot more visual visual than anything else.
Yeah.
But with a play, you know, the language is important. The characterization is important. But you can get away with, you know, like longer speeches, monologues, as long as they're interesting. And that's another great thing about seeing a play in feet. If you have a long monologue and, you know, you're starting to fall asleep in the middle of it, it's time to cut it, you know, obviously.
Right.
So,
sure.
So,
also,
you know, it's a different discipline, but there are similarities.
So you have four main characters in this show, the mother,
right.
the father, the son, and the caregiver. And each one has a different point of view. How do you write so that a character's personality comes out? In other words, my parents were from Massachusetts, okay? When they spoke, they popped the con and the havadiyad, put a quad in the mita, okay? My brothers and I were all born in Miami. We laughed at my folks. We used to tease them mercilessly, and as they got older, their accent got even stronger, even though they had all, my parents eloped and came to Miami. So how do you, when you're writing a play and you have dialogue, how do you imbue that originality and the uniqueness in that particular actor? So it's not your voice, it's the character's voice. Because you're right, you're hearing it way differently than you're reading it. Because when I'm reading a book, I can give my character from the book that I'm reading any sound I want. He can stutter, they can have a drawl, they can be very soft-spoken and all. So how does that work when you're writing dialogue for the stage?
Well, for me, and I don't know how other playwrights or novelists do it, it's pretty much the same for me as it is with a novel. I kind of become a character actor. I embody the character myself and look for the way they would speak or how they would speak to each other. I pretty much jump heads. And, you know, it's kind of like doing a method acting thing, but doing it with your characters. So I'm jumping around in a lot of different heads when I write. Not always necessarily successfully, but, you know, that's how you try. And then, again, you know, that's what rewrites are for. You go back and look at things and figure out how you can make it more distinct.
So I would imagine the director has a lot to do with that as well. So that the director takes what you've written and what you envision and make sure that your actors are conveying what you want them to convey and the emotional sense or their personality or whatever. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm no director, so it would probably not be wise for me to tell a director how to do their job, but I think that's probably a large part of it. And I think, especially plays, I think the director's job is to help the playwright, you know, bring and through the actors, bring that story to life in the best possible way. And the director always has suggestions on you know, what you can do to change things and make them better, which, you know, you sometimes listen to and you sometimes don't. It's just like an editor on a book.
Sure.
Sometimes you listen to their suggestions and sometimes you don't. It just depends, because you do ultimately, no matter what you're writing, have to stay true to your own, and I hate to use this word, you know, this phrase, artistic integrity, but, you know, as a quote artist, you want to, you know, you're the one who's putting yourself out there as the writer.
Not your editor, not a director. I understand what you're saying. That makes sense to me. I want to take a moment to remind everyone, I'm talking to Robert Gregory Brown, who's really a terrific author, but he is also a fabulous musician. And if you've listened to my show before, every time I open my show, I have a theme song that I'm very proud of and that Robert Gregory Brown wrote for me in 5 minutes. I don't believe that. It took him 15. But I love it. It's a great song. And now he's written 15 minutes? Yeah?
It may have. I can't really say.
Maybe.
I don't put a timer on when I do these things.
Okay, because it's a 48 second piece of music. I don't want to say you spent days on it because we know that's not right. 48 seconds. Anyway,
in me says it needs to be cut down to 30, but that's all right.
But I like it, and you're not touching it anymore. It's too late. It's mine. So leave it, okay? After all these years, it's mine.
I still haven't gotten that check. Did you send that check?
You're right. It's going to take – you will get it in the same amount of time it took for me to get my damn sign Paradise Prophecy, okay? How about that, buddy?
But I finally came through, didn't I?
Yeah, I got it. I got 3 years left, okay? So don't rush it. Call in and say hi to Rob. Talk about his new musical theater piece called Cradle Song. We're going to play a piece of music, but let me tell you to call in and say hi. It's 347-633-9609. Let's take a listen to some of the music. I have the full song. I can't play it, but we're going to listen right now.
Uh-oh.
For you. It is a stunning piece of music. I'm almost in tears. It's beautiful, Rob. It's beautiful. It really is.
By the way, you are
the vocalist on this song, aren't you?
I am, although in the play it's a woman singing. So yeah.
I kind of thought so when we talked about his father and so on. You know, I got that. It's a beautiful, exquisite song. Congratulations. I can't wait to hear the whole thing. I really can't. I would imagine it's spectacular.
Well,
tell me what's
you,
happening right now with it. What's going on? What phase are you in? And what do you want people to know about your play?
Well, right now we are in the beginning, we're still in the beginning phases of this. We've had a first reading. It was very successful. I think I mentioned that earlier. We had that in New York with the actors, which was very illuminating for me. And what we want to do is have more readings. And in order to get a play, ultimately we'd like to be on Broadway, like I said. And in order to do that, you have to present the play to various investors. So they can decide whether or not they want to put money into it and get the thing on its feet. But in order to do that, you have to pay actors. You have to, if you do a full stage reading where they're singing and everything, you have to pay musicians. You have to have the venue to present it. And you have to do that multiple times. Not only for the investors, but also for the people involved to get an idea of what needs, like I said before, what needs to be rewritten, what needs to be changed, that kind of thing. I mean, even I might wind up writing new songs, you know, for some parts.
Sure.
You never know.
So the entire production depends on doing it more than once, obviously.
Right. I mean, even but even before you get to the point where you're in production of the actual play, you have to get to that point. And in order to get to that point, you have to be able to present it in some way. So that's why you do a lot of different stages. And they call it, it's developmental. It's the developmental process, basically. It's kind of like how they develop a movie. You know, it takes a year or so before they actually get the movie going, and sometimes, you know, it can take 10 years. Sometimes, you know, but that's what the stage we're in now. But unfortunately, that doing that costs a considerable amount of money. And
I would imagine.
What we decided to do is we've started an Indiegogo campaign to try to do a community, you know, crowdfunding type of thing. We started the campaign yesterday, and we've already got some great donations to the project, and we're hoping to get more.
So tell us where we can find, first of all, the information for Indiegogo, because I'll put that up on my page, and we'll put it up on the Authors on the Air page and kind of float it through the network, if you would. So tell us where to find it. Yeah.
Okay. Now it's at Indiegogo.
Where are we going?
Which is Indiegogo.com. But I have a link, but, you know, it's kind of a weird link. But
why don't you put the link on my page, because, you know, you can post right on there. And then I'll share that every place else. Now,
that'd be great.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you can also, if you just go to CradleSongMusical.com, there's also, it basically tells you what the musical is about. There is a link to the Indiegogo there that you can go to. But I will also give you the direct link to the Indiegogo campaign.
Yeah, please do. Just
so that
put that right up on my page. And then I'll share that, you know, I'll share that around. Wow. I hope that this happens for you, because you've written movies, you've done television, you've got books, you're an editor, you're a publisher, besides being a damn fine author and a damn fine musician. It would be so wonderful. I'm sure you do other things that you won't even talk about, because that's just how you are, but I would love to go to New York and sit at the premiere of your show. I really would. I would do that.
Well, I would love for you to, too. I would love to go and sit at it, too. I mean, that would be fantastic.
It would be awesome.
You know,
I know the playwright. I know him. I have books by him. He even sent one to me 4 years after it was out, or 5 years after it came out. He signed it. He said, "Hell has frozen over." And it was...
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh, sure to God. We go back a long way, Rob.
Yeah.
So fun. funny.
I'm
glad Beth is working with you. She was a guest on the show too. And just so you, in case you don't know, Beth has done book trailers for quite a few authors. She's very, very talented. She's got a lovely voice. She's a keyboardist. She really knows her stuff too. Bob, I want to ask you something, though. It just popped into my mind when I was listening to your song again. How did you get your start in music? Did you take lessons when you were a kid? Did you just pick it up yourself?
No.
How did it happen?
No, I've never had it. The only lesson I ever had was when I was about 9 years old, my uncle came for Thanksgiving or something like that, and he had an ukulele. And he was playing it, and I was just like, oh, my God, I want to know how to do that. And he sat me down and taught me how to play, I think, 2, maybe 3 chords. And then when he left, he said, keep the ukulele. And that was the beginning of my musical education. And I went crazy.
But the ukulele is so different from guitar, isn't it? And you have a collection of guitars. I've seen your office.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, it's much smaller. It's only 4 strings, and but the chords are basically the same. And within a year, I think it was about within a year, my parents had bought me a guitar. And I think one of my sister's one of my sister's boyfriends had a guitar, and he probably showed me a couple of chords on the guitar too. But I eventually got my own guitar and shredded my fingers trying to learn how to play it. And I think probably by the time I was 11, maybe 10, I don't remember, I wrote my first song. So that was the beginning. And
calloused fingertips, right? Calloused fingertips.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only way you could do it. Otherwise, you'd be bleeding all the time. How did you learn how to write music? Because I can read music easily. I don't have that inborn talent the way that you do. Anything I know is just learned. It's a learned thing for me. It's not God given. I think yours is. So how did you learn to read music and write music?
Well, I actually don't read and write music at all. I don't know. I can sort of read music. I learned a little bit about reading music, but everything I do is instinct. It's from listening. And you know, I grew up with a mother who played the piano, and she played the classics.
Mm-hmm.
She played Chopin, Beethoven,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing.
How wonderful.
So, you know, listening to the complexities of that kind of music, and it just basically was just ingrained in me. And when I started writing songs, I just made them up. You know, I think
how do you convey that to the singer though in your play? I'm sorry.
What's that?
How does an actor sing your songs if he doesn't have a piece of music?
Ah, well, there are actually people who will help you with that when you don't when you don't know how to write the music. And there's also software programs that help you. Basically, what I do is I do a lot of my stuff in what's called a digital audio workstation, and in those
mm-hmm.
they usually will take your melody lines and your harmonies and your various things, and they will translate it into notes on a staff for you. Then you can then you can have somebody come in and clean it up for you. I mean, believe it or not, there are tons of musicians, famous musicians, who don't
read.
I mean, like
music,
the Beatles didn't read any music. Clueless as far as music theory goes. They just did their own
thing. Let's go ahead
and
take a call. Let's see who's
sure.
calling in. Okay, hi, 828. You're live on the air. Who's this?
Hi, Pam. This is Rebecca Warner. How are you?
Hello, Rebecca Warner. How are you?
I'm great. I want to say that I had this all queued up to listen from the beginning, and my sister called, and I haven't heard all of it. I've enjoyed listening to what I have. I was just fascinated by what you were just talking about how do you do this music if you can't write the – do you write the lyrics or do you –
Rob writes everything.
Yes, so you write the lyrics, but you don't actually do the music. You just pick it out on your guitar. And
well, usually the way I work is it's either a guitar or a keyboard, and what I'll do is I'll come up with like a chord progression that I like.
Uh-huh.
And I'll start playing the chord progression, and then the words, depending, like specifically with this play, I had to write words that were very specific to the character and to the character situation.
Right.
So I would try to find words that fit that chord progression and the melody that's coming into my head. And sometimes it's very difficult, but you know, you have to do.
I bet it is. I mean, it's difficult enough to come up with words, but then to have them, put them to the music that you have in your mind, and that's got to be pretty challenging. That's quite a talent.
It can be very challenging. Sometimes it comes very easily. Other times you're looking at a phrase and you're going, how can I make that work? It's just not working.
Exactly.
You're looking for the right word. Plus, on top of that, I don't like to do necessarily direct rhymes all the time, but
right.
you want to have kind of a rhyming scheme going also as well. And sometimes you have rhymes at the end of a line. Sometimes you have rhymes in the middle of a line. You have like what I call internal rhymes, you know.
And
it can become very complex, but you know, you just work it through until you get it right.
It must be so satisfying when you get it right.
Oh, it's
do
very
you
satisfying.
Write your the lyrics first and then the music, or the music and then the lyrics, or it could be either way?
I usually write them in tandem. I usually
mm-hmm.
get a partial musical idea, and then the words, you know, I'll work through the words. And then I'll continue with the music and then add the words. It's just they work kind of hand in hand. Sometimes, you know, you'll be walking around and a line will pop into your head and you'll go,
as
a
writer, yes.
You know,
uh-huh.
for a song. And, you know, then you go and sit down and try to see if you can figure a way to fit that to music.
Uh-huh.
But I know that Elton John, who also apparently doesn't read or write music,
right?
or, you know.
Really?
You know, it's my understanding that he wrote most of his songs, that he would be sent the lyrics by Bernie Taupin, and then he would write
right.
the music to the lyrics. I've tried
right.
doing that, and it's impossible for me to do. I just can't do it. So I have to write them, you know, basically at the same time, or write, you know, sort of at
right.
the same time.
Amazing. Well, that's fascinating
Amazing.
To me. I mean, that's such a talent, isn't it, Pam?
It really is. And I believe me, I've taken music lessons for a lot of years. I can read music. I have perfect pitch, absolutely perfect
really?
Pitch. You can clink. Yeah, you can clink a spoon on a side of a glass or a piece of crystal. I can tell you exactly what note it is.
Oh.
But I can't sing to save my life, and I have no natural-born talent. Anything that I play, I don't. It is a learned thing for me. There is nothing natural about playing. I can do something technically perfect, but it's different if you have an inborn talent. I don't have that, you know.
Well,
and
you study to be able to do it, then, is what you're saying.
I had to study, and very hard. I will tell you that. It's not easy. But, Rob, I have a couple
mm-hmm.
other questions. Rebecca, stay with me because I like the fact that you're here because you and I are going to talk later, too. You grew up with a mom who played classical music, and that's where you first started listening to it. Then you had your uncle who played Hawaiian music with his ukulele, and you got your guitar and then little by little started building up to your musical self now. Do you listen to all different kinds of music? Is there anything that you favor one over the other, or is there something you just can't stand listening to?
You know, pretty much I like all music. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like I listen to all kinds of music, so I have a lot of different influences.
Good.
I've never been a big fan of, like, top 40 type of music. Never in my entire life. Even as a teenager, I was not a big top 40 guy. Although, I suppose the songwriters that influenced me back then were like Joni Mitchell and Carole King and James Taylor. So I imagine they were probably in the top 40 for a while. But for most of my life, not a big top 40 guy, but I do listen to all different kinds of music. I love all different kinds of music.
Do you like rock and roll?
Oh, I love rock and roll. I was just...
headbanger,
I just,
rock and roll?
Oh, sure.
You know,
yeah,
I mean,
love it. Some of
okay.
it's great. I love
right.
I love some rap, you know. I love some country music. And
I love all of it.
Today I was just looking at a video of James Corden and Queen and Adam Lambert doing a sing-off, and it was a great video just hearing those great Queen songs with Adam Lambert singing them. I think he's as close to Freddie Mercury as we're ever going to get.
I
agree with you. He's
love Freddie Mercury's voice.
I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the Pavarotti and Friends videos. He does... and they're both gone now, from It's a Man's World with my brain has stopped. I can't think of his name. James Brown. And
James
Pavarotti
Brown.
Sings an Italian aria, and they sing together on the stage.
James Brown?
He's sung with, yes, they're both
and
gone
Pavarotti?
Now, of course, but he's sung with, yes. with Sting and with other artists as well. But I'm telling you, if you have a chance, go to YouTube and look up Pavarotti and James Brown. James Brown sings It's a Man's World. It is one of the most exceptional pieces of music I've ever seen. And I am a music lover. As you all know, I
love that song.
You know I don't have a TV, so I am constantly listening to music all the time. Right now, it happened to be in a show tunes type of thing. I've been obsessing over the music from Moulin Rouge, the Baz Luhrmann production, because I love it so much. Yeah, it's really excellent, the music.
And something I missed, if I may please ask Rob,
sure.
The Cradle song, of course, is that the Johann Brahms song? Is that what the title's based on? The Cradle song. The Johann Brahms song.
It's not. I mean, it's not based on.
Do you use it at all?
Composer. Everything in Cradle Song is comes
it's
from
original.
Me.
Okay.
Obviously, I could possibly be influenced by various composers. I'm sure.
But I just love the
Cradle
title.
Song. The title has to do with. It's a kind of a thing where these are people who gave birth to this child, this child, and now they're seeing him in his final days and basically, kind of seeing him on to death. And so I just thought Cradle Song was kind of an appropriate title because, your child is always your child no matter what happens,
That is just a beautiful, beautiful story. And I was looking at some of the things that people were saying about it. Now, where did they get the chance to hear this? Broadway Global?
Right.
That's
all thanks to Beth Rudetsky. She got it out to various people who are involved in various facets of stage work in New York and Broadway and things like that. And... she sent them copies of the script and also a link to where we have the music posted. And they took the time. They were willing to take the time to sit down and listen and read. And
write beautiful things about it. So
yeah, they had a lot of very nice things to say.
They certainly did.
Very
I beg your pardon. I'm with you, Pam. I want to go to New York for this.
We're going then. We'll do it. Okay. Rebecca, thanks for calling in.
Yes.
I appreciate it. I'll talk to you later on with my guest tonight, correct?
Yes, and it was so nice speaking with you, Rob. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, Rebecca.
Bye, Pam.
So I want to say one more time to everyone, it is cradlesongmusical.com. You can also look it up on Indiegogo. I'm quite certain that you're not going to turn down even the smallest donation because every little bit helps. It gives an actor a bottle of water. It helps them get through the process, the development process of this play. I absolutely urge you to go and listen to the music and listen to Rob's music in SoundCloud. Rob, tell everybody where we can find you, because, by the way, he writes some really kick-ass books, too. So, you know, if you're not a theater person, it's okay. You can read, and Rob's happy to go ahead and have you buy his stuff, too. So tell us where to find you, Rob.
Well, I'm on Robert Gregory Brown with an E on the end, .com, but unfortunately my website was hacked, so it's in the process of being rebuilt as we speak. But, you know, if you want to find my book, if you want to find my books, you can find them on Amazon. Just put in Robert Gregory Brown with an E on the end, and you'll find me in there.
Yep, and I highly recommend that you check out Trial Junkies, and you go to the Edward Fallon Linger series. Just trust me on this. It is a spectacular series of books. You've got a ton of standalones. I always recommend Paradise Prophecy. People who tell me they like Dan Brown, I say, ain't read nothing yet. Go read Paradise Prophecy.
Well, I want to clarify something on the Linger series. I only wrote the first book. I conceived of the series, and it's published under under Braunhaus Media, which is my company. But
you're the editor for all of those.
I wrote the first book, and I hired writers to write the other books.
Well, you have some very talented writers who have done that, though. They are some excellent writers. Yeah.
I only go for the best, you know.
And there you go. And so do I. And so do I. Here we are again together, Rob. I'm so glad that I had a chance to talk to you and play your song. I'm going to play it as we're going out. And thanks an awful lot. And please keep me posted on what's happening, because I'd really, really like to know what's happening in the process. And that way I can make my reservation to go to New York, and, you know, we'll stay in the theater district, and I'll take a couple friends with me, and we'll have a good old time. Opening night, right?
Good to me.
Thanks again, Rob, and I wish you all the luck in the world. God knows you deserve it, my friend. You're very, very talented, and you and I'll talk again soon, okay?
And hopefully I'll be able to get my head through the door by the next time we talk.
I hope you can too. It's okay. I won't mind taking you down a peg or two. Remember, I went through the 12 steps. I know how to do this, okay?
That's right. I remember that. Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Rob. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.